What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Well, so far you've heard my voice, but then I brought two friends along. Next on the mic is my man, Jer. Come on, Jer, sing that song.
David Tyler.
Subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast, stream wherever you get your podcasts,
and download the OTB Sports app.
The Olympic Show on OTB Sports with Indeed, proud partner of Team Ireland.
Yes, indeed. This is our Olympic show. We're live every day at 5 o'clock every evening for the next 3 weeks across all of our social channels. You'll get us on YouTube, you'll get us on Facebook, you'll get us on Twitter, and of course you'll get us on the OTB Sports app, where you can listen to us as a radio show and go about your day happy as Larry. It's all with thanks to Indeed, who are proud to support Team Ireland at the Tokyo 2020 Olympics. Indeed believes the world works better when people are given every opportunity to unleash their true talents, and the hashtag is Talent Unleashed. We'll have Richie along a little bit later on to help you plot your weekend, so you know exactly when to set the DVR for, when to get out of bed, and what you can expect in terms of good quality performances. But the Olympics are actually up and running, even though the opening ceremony has just completed. The rowers have already got underway, and I'm delighted to say Niall O'Toole is with us to talk to us generally about the entire expectations for the Irish rowing crew and also how we started. Niall is, of course, a three-time Olympian, a former world champion, and a man who knows his onions when it comes to rowing. How are you getting on, Niall?
I'm great, Jerry. How are you?
I'm pretty excited about this. It's been a long time coming.
I know. Fancy new office. What's going on?
Well, it's specifically for the Olympics. That's how seriously we're taking this.
I should hope so.
You're pretty excited about it too, by all accounts.
Oh yes, no, it's phenomenal. It's trying to get to sleep every night. It's palpable now. It really is. Around their own community, all the WhatsApp groups, all the social medias are lighting up, and everybody's just really excited. I think this is it's the most exciting time to be a rower. There's definitely no doubt about that. It's we're looking forward to a difficult week. We're all going to be on our nerves, but we're looking forward to some big performances, I think. Yeah, they're on the way.
I think maybe we should try and put a bit of context on this before we get into the specific individuals involved or even what the level of expectation is about them. There's been a transformation in Irish rowing over the last 10 years, and it hasn't, maybe it's even over the last 15 years, it hasn't been an overnight success. There was a specific change in policy about how our rowers were going to be hothoused. Can you just explain that to people who are tuning in again and remind them of exactly why this is happening?
Yeah, I think, when I was back in the day, we certainly had a much more kind of club-based system where people kind of were training in their club with their club coaches, and then they went into camp. And really, in camp was the only time you got to roll with your potential Olympic partners or your world championship partners. And now it's much more so. That I think maybe partly my fault. That was successful, and we kind of continued that for a very, very long period of time. And again, we had very, very short periods of really intense work. But now, really, the team is together basically nearly all year round. So, yeah, it's difficult for if you have. And we initially, myself and Sam, we kind of, Sam Lynch, as you know, we pushed the back against the National Rowing Centre because we thought it unfairly, in an amateur sport, we thought it unfairly discriminated against people who are working and had to leave, because we knew that was definitely the trajectory, that people were going to have to stay in Cork more and more. But I've been proven wrong, and the system in Cork, and a much more intense year-round system, is producing the goods. And yeah, I mean, Irish people are ideally placed for this sport. You know, we can do hardship, and we can do lack of adoration more better than any other country in the world. So it's perfect for us, and they have a great system. And Antonio came in from, I think we were really looking for somebody who worked in that system, and the Italian system was very, very much you kind of stay in camp, and they bake you every single day for years on end, and they get the results. And Antonio was the best guy for the job. And he's definitely producing results.
So there was
no,
a bit.
Go ahead.
I was going to say there was a bit of a battle for the soul of Irish rowing, and you know, it's we can all hold our hands up when we get things wrong. You were kind of against the notion originally, and you've come full circle on it now.
Yeah, I mean, you have to remember there's a human toll when you're like firstly, rowing is a full time sport. You know, you have to train 35 hours a week, and I guess from my point of view, our generation, we felt that we could do it all and work and have careers and stuff like that, and you can, but you do need huge blocks of time. Two and three years in the cycle off actually competing to prepare for the Olympic Games are a big, and I think from my perspective, it's fantastic to see. You do get a lot of collateral damage. You get a lot of people who will be living in camp for in the system for a very long time, don't make it, and they get spat out the other side. But that's what it's a brutal system. Sport is brutal. It's back to the old East German kind of analogy. Like you take eight people for two seats, treat them like eggs. You throw them against the wall, throw the eggs against the wall, and the people that the eggs that land on the ground and aren't broken, that's your crew. And there is a bit of data mentality in it now. So it's tough, but it's yielding results.
Right. It does sound particularly brutal. And it is one of the most brutal sports that's out there. You know, you talk about the physical toll that the athletes have to go through. It's as intense a training as the boxers go through. It's as physically demanding as anything that any of the runners do as well. And it's kind of something that we maybe take for granted when we're watching the boats. It's like they're, you know, 1,500, 2,000 meters, and we think, okay, but actually the Spartan lifestyles that they've had to lead to get to this point, we don't fully understand that, I think.
Yeah, and it looks, it's very hard, it's very easy to you know, for that, but you look at the guys on the water, and, you know, they're elegant, you know, you can't say it looks beautiful, you know, they look in time, but if you can imagine lifting a bag of potatoes from the ceiling to over your head, you know, 250 times, in 7 minutes, it's difficult. It's the ultimate kind of power. So you need power, but you also need endurance. So you're pulling on two different systems, and rowers, they would be racing at 98% over 7 minutes. It's a really brutal sport, and it takes a lot of hours to do it, and it's the career is there. But having said that, we rowers can row well into our 30s, late 30s. So at least you have a long time to perfect it. So
David Epstein, who I think his book was it The Talent Gene? It was one of those books about the different predispositions that characteristics are required for different sports. When we had him on, I was like, which sport are Ireland well set up for? And you're like, oh, rowing, actually. Rowing is one of those things that you guys are good at and could be good at as a race. You're kind of the right size and shape, and it turns out we've got the right conditions for it. So actually, this is something that we should be getting behind and that we should have expectations for, not to put the expectations on the individual athletes, but that, like, if the sport is managed properly, it could perform at an international level over a sustained period, essentially forever, because there's been, as you know, and as you were part of, there were pockets of absolute brilliance essentially a little bit out of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think it's something that uniquely works in a very, very controlled environment and controlled system. You know, you can concentrate on very small pockets of talented athletes. You can pour a lot of time and energy into them. I think from a mentality point of view as well, Ger, I think the Irish mentality really, really suits it. As I say, it's a lot of hard work with not a lot of adulation, which I've travelled all around Europe and I've seen many different systems. I trained with the Italians and I trained with the Spanish and I trained with the French and I felt that they were amazingly brittle when I actually trained with them in comparison to the people that I trained with in Ireland. But they just, I think we are, what we never did in the past, we never got the best out of our athletes. And we certainly left a lot of medals at World Championships and possibly Olympic Games in previous years, because we never really took So the whole point, if you have an average Italian and an average Irish person, years ago, the average Italian would end up better than the average Irish rower, if that makes sense to you. They seem to be able to knock better stuff out of them. And now we're in that situation where we're even. You know, if we have, we will get as much out of an ordinary athlete as any country in the world. And that's all you really, a system needs to do. That's the only thing you really want from the system, you know?
Yeah, that other point that you made about there's a bunch of people whose job it is to be part of the crew to drive standards and to kind of be the average that everybody else gets measured against. They have a very important role as in Irish international rowers, but they never actually end up going to the major tournaments or the major events and representing their country, certainly as often as the work that they would put in, I'm sure they would want.
Well, there's a huge amount of people like that are not. So it's like a pyramid, and you need a very strong base of athletes pushing the other athletes to the top. And without that solid base, that solid pyramid, you're not going to get the athletes, the top Pauls and Garys and Sunitas. You're not going to get them at the top and Fintons without that base of people really, really pushing them on. So there's a huge amount of people at home watching the Olympics who really have contributed both on and off the water to the success of the team this week. So, it's been a huge effort from a lot of people.
Let's talk about some of the individuals then. The joke about Sunita Pospor, the dominant Pospor performance again. We're going to make that joke forever. It's one of those things that's always going to do us, because it turns out she continues to be dominant.
Yeah, I mean, she was much better than she was early on in the season. She had she's very limited racing this year, which I always worry, because I feel she's a confidence athlete. She needs a lot of racing. She needs to go through those processes as many times as possible. So she had very little racing this year, and she was beaten in Lucerne, which was a kind of a guideline, but with very little boat speed, very little speed work done pre that big regatta. But she's definitely going better. She's definitely back to her old form. But there's a lot of people in that field now, and it's really down between three or four scholars, you know, between who can win it. And it's going to be a really, really difficult week. There's lots going on. There's a New Zealand scholar, Emma Twigg, who's been finished fourth in the last two Olympic Games. There's the, can I call it the Russian scholar? Or we call it, it's the...
Flag, sorry, it's the... Flag with no name, flag. Yeah.
The Russian scholar, let's call it the Russian scholar.
Yeah, she's from Russia, fair enough.
She's been cleaning up throughout Europe this year. She was in a crew there, for instance. So the example of COVID, you know, she's somebody who would not be at this Olympic Games in the single school if it happened last year. So she's going to be a threat. The American's going to be a threat. The Austrian's going to be a threat. So there's a lot of people bunched in that field together. I'm a little bit concerned. I'm a little bit concerned. I don't like the water for her. I think it's a little bit bobbly. It's a little bit poppy. She can be a little bit. Yeah, she doesn't sometimes handle with water that well. But still, I'm very, very positive. I think she's going to get better as the regatta goes on. That's for sure. And listen, it's going to be down to fine margins. But please God, I think everybody in Irish rowing. The one thing everybody said in Irish rowing when the games didn't happen last year was, oh my God, Sunita, you know, when is she? Because she was red hot and there was nobody touching her. There's a few more people in the pot this year, and I just hope and pray, and we're all hoping and praying that she gets that medal, because everybody is absolutely rooting for this unbelievable woman and the journey that she's been on. So, fingers crossed, guys, that she's going to do it for us. For herself.
And the second heat of that, she won in a time of 7 minutes and 46 seconds. She won by over 8 seconds, but the next round wasn't supposed to be until Monday. It looks like it's been pulled forward until Sunday, or it's been brought forward to Sunday because of weather concerns. So that would kind of feed into some of those issues you have as well. We also had Ronan Byrne and Philip Doyle in the men's double sculls. They were out this morning, and it didn't go to plan for them. What was what happened to their performance, and what happens next to them? Because they're not out.
No, they're not out. They're in the rep tomorrow, and they're in the rep tomorrow, and a very easy rep, so they'll qualify through it. I think it's going to be quite routine for them. Really, really poor start. Like terrible. They fell off the blocks. I don't know whether they were trying to be overly loose and overly calm, and they were half a length down at 250, and in this field you just cannot give anybody anything. I think the water was a bit poppy. If you saw the conditions on the lake today, everybody will say the water looks perfect. It's not. It's a kind of gnarly little side wind that if you're behind, and it can start, the boat can start to roll a little bit, and it can be hard to make up ground. Having said that, they sprinted in the last bit. They weren't going to catch the Swiss, so they backed it off there. So it's funny because that 250 has a big telling on the race. If they had qualified today, they would be straight in to the semi-finals, I think, the semi-finals, which would be early next week. So it would be on a Monday, but they've pushed the racing, pulled the racing forward. So now they're racing 3 days in a row, which isn't ideal for them. So they're racing tomorrow and Sunday. So so if that makes sense to you. So they're always going to race tomorrow, but the semi-final was supposed to be on Monday. It's all very confusing with the times. But the semi-final was supposed to be on a Monday, and now that'll be on a Sunday. So now they have three races in a row, even though tomorrow's going to be a walk in the park for them. I think it's it's fine margins. As well, they might get, because of that poor showing, they may get a harder semi-final as well. So it's 15, 20 strokes off the start can cost you the whole regatta.
Okay.
But having said that, the French are pretty good. The Chinese are exactly the same crew, that they're going exactly the same speed as they were all year. So they are the speed of the Chinese. These boys can absolutely medal if everything happens for them. And I'm still very hopeful, very optimistic that they will.
Okay, well, it's actually a busy day from about 1:10 tonight. They're back in action. That's Ronan Byrne and Philip Doyle in the men's double sculls. That's the repechage one at 1:40.
That's easy peasy for them,
okay.
By the way. Yeah.
Okay, no expectations. Aileen Crowley and Monica Dukarska in the women's pair in heat three. That's 1:40 at 2:20. This is in the morning now. Tomorrow morning, Margaret Kremen and Aoife Casey in the lightweight women's double sculls. And then I think it's around about 3:30, 3:00, Fintan McCarthy and Paul O'Donovan in the lightweight men's double sculls in the second heat. Let's talk about this, right? What is the level of performance that they need to put in to win this? And what is the big threat that is out there for them?
Well, let's talk about the boys first. Let's talk about our big chance, you know. Fintan and Paul, and they've beaten everybody. There's the only country that they haven't made. So some of the difficulties with COVID. None of the Australians, New Zealanders, Canadians, or Americans came to Europe this year. So you're kind of racing them blind for the first time. This isn't a problem for Fintan or Paul. Actually, the Australians and the New Zealanders aren't even competing, so they didn't qualify a boat. The Canadians won't do anything. The Americans don't have a boat. It's all there for them to take. I mean, they are miles ahead of everybody. Now, when I say that in terms of miles, I mean 2 seconds. So that's a big, big distance in rowing. No. I'm being flippant. The boys can make a mistake and still win. Is the point, and that's the thing. They can have an off day and they can still win the gold medal. They're going to have a bit of pressure from. So they won't have any problems tomorrow. They'll qualify straight into the next round. The next boats are look out for the Germans and the Italians. Jason Osborne is the e-cycling world champion, so that's professional cycling. It went indoors last year. He won the world championships in e-cycling, so look out for him. He's got a bit of an engine. They actually swapped around seats, him and his partner, the Germans, and they were trying out different combinations.
And what difference does that make? So just explain that to people, will you?
So stroke and bow. So... Jason Osborne was in the stroke seat.
That's the front.
Yeah, that's the person setting the rhythm. Okay, so if you're watching a boat, they're going that way, it's the guy to the right. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Boat's going out, so it's the guy to the right. The guy setting the rhythm, and the guy in the bow seat is the guy following the rhythm. So they have been changing back and forth a little bit, and they might have found some speed there, possibly. You have the Italians who are pretty good, so it's going to be the Italians. It's going to be the Italians, the Germans, and the Norwegians for those minor places, and the boys hopefully will be well out ahead. That's the hope.
How does Paul O'Donovan get in form? How does he judge? Like, what is it that he can do that he has influence over that will make sure that he performs for those 7 minutes?
Like Paul is a phenomenon. Paul is one in a million. Paul can go straight from a double and go into a single and win the world championship in the double and then jump into the single and win the world championship in the single. He is just a phenomenal athlete, mentally, physically. He is the complete article. Pound for pound, the best rower in the world, by far, in my opinion. He's just so far ahead of everybody else. It's just hard to fathom. It really, really is. It truly is. He's an extraordinary talent. And it's very hard to compare him with anything or even talk about his mentality because it is absolutely so unique. And he seems to be able to jump in, with great respects to Fintan, jump in with anybody and make the boat special. He's a winning mentality, and we used to say this all the time, but he just doesn't let up. He will go and go and go and go, no matter what is happening to his body, whether it's shutting down, he will go and go until that bow ball is in front. And he will do that, and he will go and go and go, and there's nobody to match him in the world. And that's it. It's very hard to say any more about Paul. He is just a phenomenon. Fintan's first Olympic Games. It's going to be interesting from him. He's going to be feeding off Paul a lot, I hope.
He must feel a bit of pressure, right? Because obviously there's a famous partnership here that kind of won the hearts of the public, and he's taken the second seat. And obviously he must be incredible to get to this level. So there is a little bit of pressure on him to make sure he delivers, given everything you've said about Paul. And it's a team sport, ultimately.
Exactly. Well, Paul is not going to win it without Fintan, that's for sure. And there is quite a bit of pressure on him. I'm sure Gary, you know Gary as well as I do. Gary's a complete legend. Gary will be in Fintan's ear, supporting him and trying to, you know, keep him as calm as he possibly can. So there's a team within a team there, and he will be protected within that skid bubble. Everybody knows the support that within that skid bubble. Dominic's a great influence as well. So I'm not really too worried about Fintan. I think he has a great support network, not only within the team, but also in the broader sense. And they've all done it before, so I think he's going to perform immaculately. I think he's going to do a great job.
Okay, I hope you're right, Niall.
I hope I'm right too.
Apart from dropping some wisdom on us all here on OTB this evening, you're also encouraging people in your day job to get people out rowing. That's the crew class, indoor rowing classes that you've been running. Yeah. But you've got a fundraiser coming up for Special Olympics on the 31st of July. Can you tell us about how people can get involved in that?
Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah, we're doing it in association with Fulfill, the Fulfill Bars. And we're doing that, and Special Olympics Ireland is a fundraiser. So we're taking people down St. Patrick's Rowing Club in Ringsend on the 31st of July. You're going to learn to row on the rowing machine, the best workout you can possibly do. And we're going to do a class after that. You can go to my Instagram, Crew Class Dublin, and read all about it there. So it's a great cause. I mean, Special Olympics Ireland, such a special organisation. I'm really excited to be able to help them out. And it's going to be a great day. Come and learn how to row. I'm going to teach people how to row. You'll always have it as a skill, no matter where you go. So, yeah, come along. And check out my Instagram.
Good stuff.
You see all of them.
Niall O'Toole, thanks a million and best of luck. Cheers.
Cheers.
Talk to you again soon. That's Niall O'Toole. As I said, a three-time Olympian, so he knows exactly what he's talking about. A former rowing world champion as well. This is our Olympic show. We're live every day at 5 o'clock across all of the OTB social channels on Facebook, on YouTube and on Twitter. We're on the OTB Sports app as a radio show live on our continuous feed there on OTB Sports Radio. It's all with thanks to Indeed, who are proud to support Team Ireland at the Tokyo 2020 Olympics. Indeed believes the world works better when people are given every opportunity to unleash their true talent, and the hashtag is Talent Unleashed. Richie McCormack is with us as well. Richie, good afternoon to you. How are you doing?
How are you, Jerry? Well?
Yeah. Expectations are quite high amongst the Irish sporting public. We don't tend to do really well when we've got massive expectations.
Yeah, this Olympics has seemed to have gone from, like, it's hard for a delayed Olympics to be under the radar, but in terms of the Irish expectation of it, I don't think many people were thinking about medals. They just wanted to see the thing happen in the first place. And suddenly, like, I'm talking to people over the last couple of days doing the Olympic show, and they're talking about, you know, five medals could be a realistic haul, and who knows, maybe more beyond that. Now, it needs, like Noel mentioned it there, it needs a lot of things to go right for a lot of people for that to happen. But, you know, it's not beyond the realm of possibility, and things seem to be on a slightly more even keel than they were 5 years ago. There's no positive drugs test in the boxing camp on the day of the draw. There's no officials being filmed in their bathrobes being hauled away to the local police facility. It's all fairly calm. It's ticking over, and there's a lot of confident and really well-prepared people among that 116 Irish athletes that could well bring home a decent proportion of medals. I don't want to say it. I don't want to get my hopes up too much either, but, you know, there's every reason to be confident looking what we have over there.
Yeah, look, we wish them all the best. It's just that everything comes down to very fine margins in one specific moment where you can completely blow your chances. Sunita Paspor didn't last night. She got off to a particularly good start. I mean, she was absolutely expected overnight to win, but when you have the burden of the expectation that she's carrying, the quality of the performance was pretty good last night.
She actually couldn't have been bettered. I don't see how. She completely dominated that field. It wasn't even close. It was a battle then for second and third as regards who came behind her. But she afterwards was keeping the head down. She was saying that there are still improvements need to be made. She can still race better. And she just, it's like any of the events, they just want the first one to be behind them, because then they're motoring. Then they know what the lay of the land is as regards everybody else. They know where they are personally in terms of their own performance. And Sunita, as Niall mentioned there, she's a big confidence role. She needs to know where she is in her own head and to be able to bring and carry forward that confidence into the quarterfinals and beyond. I think she's probably in a way going to be helped by the fact that everything's going to be brought forward a little bit, because the less time you have to sit around and think is probably the better for all these athletes over there. So with a tropical storm expected on Monday, the rowing is going to be junted forward a little bit, and she's going to be back in the water for her quarterfinal on Sunday. So fingers crossed once again, like looking through the times, there's nothing really to fear there for her in the quarterfinals, and she should come through that pretty unscathed, you would hope, unless the water turns out to be pretty choppy, and these things can turn pretty quickly. But through to a semi-final, you would hope from there on in that she'd be confident of picking up a medal.
Okay, before we talk about the opening ceremony, we might wrap with that, but what is the schedule of tomorrow's events that people are looking at? There's everything from boxing to taekwondo to dressage to the hockey team playing.
Yeah, listen, everybody's going to have to get up early or pull an all-nighter if they're going to be wanting to watch most of the Irish in action, because pretty much at 1:10 a.m. is when it all starts, with Ronan Byrne and Philip Doyle returning for that repechage you were talking about there. The extremely confident Rhys McClenaghan, like, it's a huge pity that the time zone is against us here, because McClenaghan is one of these athletes, like, supremely confident, really, really looking forward to these games from a long way out. And he's at 2 a.m. this morning in the opening rounds of the Pommel Horse. Now, fingers crossed, he'll come through that unscathed and everything will be a little bit more lined up in terms of the Irish audience. But he's really someone to look out for, perhaps not in terms of a medal, but just in terms of performance, because I don't think Ireland has seen a gymnast like Rhys McClenaghan. We had two in 2016, but I don't think they're at the level that he is at with his own particular apparatus. And then 3 a.m., we've got the men's road race and the cycling. There's always hope that something could come of this, because we've got Nicholas Roach and Dan Martin, who are well capable of providing a big result, as is Eddie Dunbar on his day. Then back at 3:30 on the water with Afra Kyo, Emer Lam, Fiona Murta and Emily Hegarty in the women's four in the rowing. The boxing obviously is going to be the main Irish point of interest, as it always is, and Olympic Games, and our interest gets underway at 4:03 in the morning. Again, Kurt Walker is kind of going to go under the radar with this one. I was speaking yesterday to Jason Quigley about his chances, and he really fancies Kurt Walker to go a big way and a long distance into this draw. He's taken on Jose Quiez Brotons, who's a former European bronze medalist in his own right as well. So he's no mug that he's got in front of him, Walker, in terms of his first round opponent. But it's one that is doable, and he knows that if he can come through that fight, then there's every reason to believe that he could go deep and really far into that draw. As you mentioned there, Jared, taekwondo, from an Irish perspective, again, not something we're 100% familiar with, but Jack Woolley can help us do that at 5:16 tomorrow morning against the Argentine Lucas Lautaro Guzman. That's going to be in the round of 16. And Heike Holstein competing for Ireland aboard Sambuca. So doing Sambuca at 9 o'clock in the morning is Heike at 9 o'clock in the dressage. The slightly more palatable in terms of time, Ellen Walsh is going to be going in heat 2 of the women's 100 metre butterfly in the swimming. Looking through the qualifying times there, there is every reason to suggest that she's going to come through and book her place in the next round. I think she's got the second fastest time amongst those that are in her heat. It's going to be the top 16 through each of the, obviously, the four or five heats that are going to go through. But Ellen can definitely pull out a time tomorrow and get through to those last 16. And then Dara Green in the 50 metre breaststroke just after 12:30. He's going to be up against it. The times in that, like, it's such a short event, and you really need to be on the form of your life going into it. I don't think that's necessarily the case for Dara, but I think he could put out something respectable tomorrow and get through. And then we finally bridge that gap for the Ireland women's hockey team. It's going to be lunchtime tomorrow. It means we all get to watch it. The Ireland women's hockey team going up against South Africa. Ireland 8th in the world, South Africa down around 15th. And there's every reason to believe that Ireland can get off to a winning start. It's just an awful pity, like everything else, that there's no one there. Like the hockey crowd that were there 5 years ago in Rio were fantastic. There was so many family members had made their way over to Rio that it really felt like a home event for pretty much all of Ireland's home matches, except against the Argentines, who themselves brought their own big crowd, and that was in the men's event. And this would have been so much similar, you would imagine, in Tokyo. But the Ireland team have every confidence after performing well at the Euro Hockey about a month or so ago, and then off the back of what they did in the World Cup too. So fingers crossed for Irish hockey again.
The last thing that I wanted to talk to you about was the actual Olympic opening ceremony, which traditionally has been pomp and circumstance and pageantry, and sometimes actually really interesting, like the, if you remember that time when we all thought that England was coming out of its colonial shackles in 2012, and how wrong we were, as the Queen dived out of the plane and Danny Boyle, I don't know, made us believe something that wasn't true. That's, I suppose,
Liberal Britain's dead and gone.
That's what directors are supposed to do. That's what he would say. What was this Olympic opening ceremony like? And Naomi Osaka ended up lighting the Olympic cauldron.
She did, yeah. She's the first tennis player in Olympic history, I believe, to light the Olympic cauldron. And it's a huge moment for her, a huge moment for Japanese sport, because she would represent one of the main, focal points for Japanese sport heading into these Olympics. And it is fantastic, given what she's gone through over the past while, and her pulling out of the French Open, her sitting out Wimbledon. It seems going to be competing in the US Open. But for her to be front and centre, lighting that Olympic torch, is going to imbue her with a massive sense of confidence that she can go on and do something special. It was really reminiscent of, I guess, Cathy Freeman in 2000 in Sydney, when she lit the Olympic torch. It looked like the games, from an Australian perspective, was all going to be, you know, wrapped around her, and indeed kind of turned out to be. I think the same could be said of Osaka. If she can, again, it's going to be one of these first round wins. If she can get that first round win, you know, blow off the rust and go deep into that draw, there's every reason to believe she could pull out something really special in the women's tennis. And it will be a huge moment both for her and indeed for Japan. As regards the event itself, like, it was an opening ceremony. It's really understated and really strange, because there wasn't necessarily the big production level of production of Danny Boyle, was it 9 years ago or even 5 years ago in Rio, because everything's a little bit dialed back. It seemed a little bit longer. They had to fire the choreographer because of anti-Semitic remarks. There's all this stuff going on in the background. And then you have the athletes, who are diminished in number because they have to mitigate against COVID, coming out and waving to nobody. So everybody's kind of spoiled. Their moment is a little bit spoiled, because it's not what it should be. They don't have masses, 80,000 people in the stadium cheering them on to come out. It just seems a little bit hollow. But we did have our greased up people from Tonga and Vanuatu, so at least we had that going for us.
Good stuff, Richie. Thanks a million for whetting the appetite and giving everybody their overnight schedule. Cheers.
Cheers, Ger.
It's Richie McCormick, who hopefully has plotted your weekend for you perfectly. A reminder, of course, the Olympic show will be live again at 2 p.m. Kathleen Noble is on the show, talking to us about rowing at that point as well. This is our Olympic show, live at 5 o'clock every weekday evening for the next 3 weeks. You'll get us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter and on the OTB Sports app. It's all thanks to Indeed, who are proud to support Team Ireland at the Tokyo 2020 Olympics. Indeed believes the world works better when people are given every opportunity to unleash their true talents. The hashtag is Talent Unleashed. Take care.
The Olympic show on OTB Sports with Indeed, proud partner of Team Ireland.
Well, so far you've heard my voice, but then I brought two friends along. Next on the mic is my man, Jer. Come on, Jer, sing that song.
David Tyler.
Subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast stream wherever you get your podcasts
and download the OTB Sports app.